Hi guys, this is Ravina Mehta. I'm a singer and an artist, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, we share a conversation with singer and songwriter Ravina Mehta. Stay tuned. Once again, thank you for listening to the show and for sharing it with your friends and family, for rating and kindly reviewing it, and for following along on social media. Whether it's your first episode or it's first up on your weekly playlist, it's very much appreciated and I'm quite grateful. So I've always felt there's both an external and an internal power and peace to music. On the outside, it brings us all together to listen or dance, and on the inside, it can be the catalyst and soundtrack for so many deeply personal emotions. To capture some of this, it was great to share a conversation with singer and songwriter Ravina Mehta about all those internal and external forces at play with her music. Ravina was born in Belgium and moved to Mumbai when she was a teen. She grew up very perceptive of the world around her, with a love for painting and fine art, deeply informing Ravina's expressions and shaping her training in music and fine arts from classical Indian to Western contemporary. Ravina has been releasing music that indeed speaks to many moods, tones, and vocal dimensions for the soul-searching, for the romantic, and for the dance floor. Her versatile singing can flow in both Hindi and English, and her authentic expressions of fashion and style exude a cool and chic vibe. Just this past year, she's released singles like Kho Jao Main as a soulful and vulnerable window, Sona Jeha Chehra as an ode to her new marriage, and Awara as a disco-funk homage to being in love. And in collaboration with producer Rishi Rich, an EP is forthcoming in 2024. She's now spending her time in New York, and so we caught up recently to chat about how the artistic journey feels for her and about what the concept of home means, and even about listening to music and her own playlist. But I was first curious of a pretty basic everyday thought related to art and inspiration in how often she actually dreams about music.
I dream about music really often, and I think that's partly because that's all I do in my day. I'm either painting or creating art through music or drawing, painting. And for me, what I end up doing is I wake up, if it's something that's really got me excited in the middle of my sleep, I end up waking up and taking a little voice memo. A voice note of the either if it's like notes or like humming or and I've honestly gotten some really beautiful melodies through dreams, and I think that's a beautiful way in which your subconscious is speaking to you. It's things that are stemming from you, and I think it's just another outlet.
It's handy to have those voice notes nearby. I mean, you know, those times they say people, like, you know, when they're driving or when they're in the shower or, you know, they're just doing something that's completely thoughtless. And yet, you know, there's this kind of flash of inspiration comes in. For you, is it a little bit different than when you're trying to intentionally capture that, or you're working in the studio? And I'm sure it must be much more magical when those two things are happening at the same time.
100%. I think, honestly, for me, I'm someone that's very guided by my environment. I think the energy and spaces and people, they really kind of guide my experience of whether it's just living on a day-to-day basis, which can be quite jarring as well, because, you know, you're making yourself vulnerable to a lot of things and people. But at the same time, when it comes to music, it's just a beautiful way in which I think when your environment around you allows you to kind of, or like kind of gauge some kind of, whether it's inspiration or whether it's some kind of just feeling of like, wow, that felt kind of transcendental. And like, I feel something. Yeah. I think that's very special. And I think I think those two things generally do have to go hand in hand, but there are times when you're at the studio and you're on like a deadline and you need to get things done, that you have to really draw inspiration from the depths of you. And I think that's a very powerful thing as well.
Yeah, I mean, especially to get motivated, you know, sometimes you need kind of structure and framework, you know, to it, whether it's a deadline or someone even pushing you. And you're 100%. Someone who has collaborated and worked with so many very talented people in many different spaces. So how can you tell when working with someone artistically or professionally or even in a creative way, how can you tell when that partnership is really clicking?
I think I generally am able to gauge through initial or prior conversations to us even getting into the studio. I think for me, leading with authenticity is really important. So in all of my interactions with artists or creators or whoever I'm working with, I want to be 100% me and allow that to kind of guide the interaction as well. But I think it's not always that you're going to have like 100%, you know, harmony. But I think what you can do is put up your end of it and just be like, look, I'm going to be honest and I'm going to be me and put the best, you know, my best self out there. And you're just hoping that, you know, the other person's doing the same thing and wants to create something really special. And I think when it comes to like creating, I think it's like anything, whether you're creating art, whether you're creating a business, whether you're creating something from nothing. And I think there's so much energy and power in that, that I think if you're putting your best foot forward, I do believe that generally people reciprocate.
Do you feel that comfort when initially, of course, there's always kind of an orientation to get to know somebody in the artistic space, but when you, as you find yourself becoming more comfortable with being uncomfortable or vulnerable, you know, is that a signal that you can perhaps start like exploring and taking more risk when it comes to your creativity?
100%. I feel like something that I've learned through my own journey is that, like, I think it's at the end of, or I think it's through discomfort that you're growing and that you're allowing yourself to, you know, seek different kind of parts of you. I think it's really exciting. And like, you do have to go through like the rough end of it sometimes to also grow and be a better artist, but more importantly, be a better person. So I think discomfort is a big part of the process. And I think being vulnerable is probably key.
Yeah, it almost is one of those things that when you're in a unfamiliar space, you're definitely a little more guarded. But when you feel like you're at home and around those who know you really well, you can kind of let your guard down and it feels a little bit more comfortable to be you. Both, you know, artistically, and we were even talking about, you know, even geographically, you've been in so many different places and have had so many areas where you found your, that variety, both artistically and geographically, I'd say. And I wonder for you, kind of, what does that concept of home mean to you when it comes to your art?
I think home is, it's such a beautiful yet loaded word. And I think I actually wrote something on New Year's. I was coming back to the States from India and I wrote this just like a small poem. And I think I'll just read out like the first line or something. And I think I'd said something like, does home exist in dualities? Do we exist in dualities? And I think there's something really like important there to me, because I think home for me means people. And the energy that people kind of bring, because I think spaces, this may sound a bit like vague, but
that's,
I think
spaces
and like material things are fleeting. And I think that's something that I've kind of learned through moving around and through experiencing, being able to kind of find my own happiness, even sometimes when it's out of my control. Because, you know, sometimes you, like, I was brought up in Belgium. I moved when I was 11 years old to India, and then and then moved again. Those are drastically different environments, but I still considered both home, and then moved from India to the UK for university, back home to India, and then moved here after getting married last year. And I think through that, you just realize the evolution of your identity. In and you're just constantly growing. And I think home becomes kind of like, it's almost like a medium to just allow you to kind of be your best self, allow you to grow. But I do think home as like a material concept is fleeting, and I think it's more internal. But I think you can be your own home.
Right. I was just going to say that there, it's probably less about the location and the space and environment, more about your kind of inner peace of what that home means, whether it's the people you're attached to or the art that you're actually, you know, conceptualizing there. Has that appreciation for finding that concept of home, no matter where you are, has that translated to a different way to be creative and express yourself at the same time? Meaning that, 100%. You know, you maybe have a little bit more adaptability and flexibility with what you're comfortable with.
Yeah, I think so. I think something that I have learned, especially even over the last year, where I've never lived in the States. And so I moved here and have moved to this beautiful city. And I think I've honestly, as a person, probably I've just grown so much through also the discomfort of knowing that you're in an environment where, you know, you don't have your infrastructure. You are, in a way, you're on your own, and you need to now just make sure that you are doing what you need to do, especially if you're someone that's guided by your environment and by like people around you, like somewhat of like a chameleon, where like your kind of your environment like allows you to, you know, just kind of
almost be a shapeshifter.
And I think something that moving here, just as a more recent anecdote as well, or like just experience, has really like taught me the importance of taking the time. Sometimes I think taking a step back, or taking two steps back to go five steps forward, is really important, because, you know, inspiration doesn't stem out of anywhere. I think it, either you seek it, either it's coming, like either it's you're in an environment and you're able to gauge it and, you know, do something with it. But if you're not feeling it, then what do you do? Right. And it's your job. So it's part of what you do. It's your work. It's not just a hobby.
When you realize those moments, does it help kind of to get unstuck, if you will? Because some people, of course, you can get very, very stuck in that situation and feel like you're trapped. And others might respond to saying, well, you know, look, this is great. I'm here to explore and discover more about myself and become unstuck. And is that, does that process also translate to, you know, how you work professionally?
It does. I think for me, whenever I do feel stuck, I take it as something that's, it's part of my journey, right? It's part of my own growth. And I've been stuck at different points in my life. And had I not had those experiences, I wouldn't be the person I am today. And if I'm proud of where I stand today, those were integral to getting me here. So I think I just see it like that. So even if it is, you know, a time in your life where you're feeling a little bit underwater and you're trying to figure things out, and you might not see the light just yet. But I think just having the faith that, like, you know, this is just part of a greater journey. This is just like a little blip. And or it's just, it's the most important thing to happen, and you'll only be able to see that later. I think that's what helps me, kind of operating with a little bit of like just faith, like just peace of mind, where you're prioritizing peace of mind over everything else.
Yeah, and almost like you're embracing a little bit of discomfort and creative tension, and, you know, this kind of fuels you a little bit too.
Exactly.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with singer and songwriter Ravina Mehta. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is Sid Sriram, and you're now listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi, this is Farhan Akhtar.
Hi, guys. I'm Ananya Pandey.
Hi, this is Madhuri Dixit, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with singer and songwriter Ravina Mehta. I'm always struck by artistic, you know, venues and vehicles and what they might offer artists and creators. So I'm curious whether music and, you know, the art of music and the creation of music offers for you a shelter or a retreat or something like a sanctuary of privacy to escape, or rather is it a big open space to jump into and more like have a party? Or maybe it's both, actually.
I think it can be a little bit of both. I think it almost depends on, you know, where I'm at. But I do think that for me, going into the studio, like over here, I have a small walk-in closet that I've converted into a studio room. Right. And for me, that space is, it's like, it's my sanctuary. It's where I can be almost whoever I want to be, or it's also where I can be a very raw self. And I feel that way in my home. I feel that way with my closest people. But I think what music and art gives me is meditation. And I think the ability to really get engulfed into something, kind of separate myself. But it's not as an escape. It's just more for like my own inner, just my inner peace, which I have mentioned before. But like it genuinely is for that. It just helps me just operate in like just like a calmer way where I'm just like, okay, this felt good.
I almost feel like that's a great way to blend the two, right? I mean, it's a sanctuary for inner peace, and yet when you're there, having that inner peace almost feels like a party.
Yes, exactly. You know? I think for me, like since I was very young, I grew up around my grandparents and a lot of family, and I think through conversations that I've had with them as well, where there was a massive just prioritization of inward thinking and reflection and introspection and being good. My family, they're Jain, which is wherein they follow like the principles of Jainism follows principles of like ahimsa.
Yeah.
And which is nonviolence. And like, I think taking some of those things that I've learned really like, through like things I've read or through my grandparents at really young ages, I'm able to in a way adapt or kind of instill those values in like my own way. Those are my own values today. It's more in the form of spirituality through religion, through music or through art, where it just allows me to just be at like a good, just happy state of mind.
Yeah. And, you know, I imagine that that's the best vehicle by which you can almost practice that spirituality and like express that same, those principles that, you know, you're talking about. I was listening to Awara and even your latest remix of Jab Tu Hai Wahi, and, they feel a little bit more like a pivot to some more disco funk. Or even dance hall or even house kind of music where there's a little bit more of a spirit to them of kind of trance or dance or you know, some a little bit deeper kind of disco funk, if you will. Are these styles that you equally find as much comfort as the soul and R&B, you know, styles of some of your previous work?
That's a really good question. I would say that these styles don't come very naturally to me. What comes very naturally to me is soul, R&B, neo soul. Like these are just vocally as well. I know that my voice rests really comfortably in those genres as well. It's what I grew up singing, and I also know that that's where I feel most confident. In those genres. But when I was creating these, when I was creating especially Avara, what I wanted to kind of convey through that was this idea of like feeling, like being so able to be yourself and feeling liberated, but also like you're liberated on your own, but you're also liberated in the presence of your partner, whoever that is, a companion, just someone that you kind of, you know, have taken the path of life with. And when I was kind of like ideating what that means musically, I was speaking to the producers and we were just like, I think this needs to go in like a fun kind of like upbeat, you know, just to kind of get what you're trying to say across. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. It'll be fun.
Right. Yeah. Well, it speaks to that exploration, right? Of saying, hey, you know, I want to express a little bit more of that liberation and finding companionship and what that means. But that in the moment, probably making that spirit, whether it's upbeat or whether it feels more bouncy, in that way, when you branch out and explore and take risks and stretch your vocal style and find more versatility with this, does that come at the cost of mastery? Like, is being more versatile such an amazing way to promote your art and style to new listeners? And yet, do you ever feel like, you know, well, it prevents me from becoming even more of a master where I'm so comfortable with?
I think that's a very, it's a constant struggle I actually deal with, because I'm someone that I really enjoy the process. For me, it's like, I'm a very process driven person. So when it comes to creating work, my like spaces where I like honestly I thrive is like the slower, whether it's love songs, soul, R&B, very like almost like dreamy, and I think that comes naturally to me. But at the same time, I think it's kind of like the mix between, like, for an artist, you're kind of oscillating between two sides of you, right? Like, there's the business and there's the artist in you, especially because this is something you're doing as a job. Like, it's also part of the work that you're doing. It's you doing things that work or like are more commercial, or it's hard as an artist to kind of find that balance between how much for you and how much for the audiences.
I was just gonna say it's a tough balance in that you want to express yourself creatively, and yet in order to do that at scale, you have to keep the lights on and you have to, you know, make sure that the business is running and your brand is
there. Exactly.
And so is it kind of a constant tug of war between, you know, those two sides? And of course, when you strike a great balance, then of course it harmonizes, you know, so well.
It does. Exactly. I think it is quite a tug of war. But I think for most artists, it ends up becoming a little bit of a tug of war, especially when you're trying to put yourself out there. You're being vulnerable with your art, which is never an easy thing. It's the same thing with branding yourself. You're still putting yourself out there. So it's not going to be an easy thing. There's a lot of discomfort associated in, you know, the way perception works, or the way self-perception works with all of this stuff.
You know, you have to have that sort of self-trust, if you will, and that confidence that, hey, you know, your inner self is not changing, but the, again, the shape-shifting and the persona changes and the vulnerability of putting yourself out there is different. Styles is not necessarily changing who you are. You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with singer and songwriter Ravina Mehta. Stay tuned. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, this is Vidya Balan, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi, I'm Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tam France.
Hi, my name is Richa Morjani, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Hi there, I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with Ravina Mehta. Each iteration, with each new song, and even in making this upcoming EP, what are some of the things that with each version of what you just mentioned in making music, what are some of the things that you've kind of had to unlearn with each step along the way?
I think something that I've had to unlearn, especially a bit more recently, is one is like letting go a little bit. I think whether it's like letting go of your art or letting go of a process, like a process can be, can come to fruition, and that's what it was. And I think as an artist, sometimes you get a little bit caught up where you're just like, wow, like that was amazing. And you want something to either, like you're like, I don't think it's ever about replicating a process or replicating a feeling, but you can anchor yourself to something. And I think sometimes just like learning the art of like letting go and just kind of trusting that, like, you know, something, there's something else that's in store and you're going to grow through that. So I think those are important things. And I think honestly, on the business end of things as well, there's been so much growth for me personally, wherein I think it's, you do have to separate parts of yourself when it comes to running something in a way that's, you know, sustainable, viable, something you see for the future. And I think in doing that, you do have to unlearn, or rather not, maybe not unlearn, but just, you know, tug certain parts away for a little bit, which can, you know, maybe come back out later. Like they're not gone, but, you know, you do have to prioritize other things as well, which I think, you know, help you at different stages of life. Like at this stage in my life where, like, say I see a vision for myself and I wish to operate with a vision because, you know, I have that faith in my abilities. But at the same time, like, I know that, like, I'm not anchoring myself to that.
Sure. Well, and that I imagine can be challenging, but again, part of the growth process. I'm also curious if in making music and, you know, even adapting to be even more savvy, if you will, as both an artist and even in the on the business side, has this made you a better listener of music, almost appreciating art in many forms, but also understanding, wow, that's wonderful, and it's a beautiful piece of work, but in my listening skills, I've grown to know that this is not something I want to put out there.
Yep. I do think that I've definitely built those skills over the years. When I started out, I think I was just an active receiver of all kinds of art.
Yeah.
I studied art formally as well, fine art. So for me, like, it's a lens that I genuinely see the world with even today. And I studied all kinds of art, from conceptual art, which is it's entirely conceptually driven, to, you know, fine art, to political art. I think today I can say that, like, when I listen to music, I know certain things that work for me and things that don't work for me. That's not to say that they do and don't for other people. That's a personal choice.
Almost being comfortable with what doesn't make it out there.
Yeah.
And again, part of that letting go process.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking also a little bit about some of the value that you have. You're someone who values aesthetic, particularly a fashion aesthetic, as well, as it adds to sort of your persona. And I read that you describe your fashion sense as edgy chic. So I'm curious, I mean, edgy chic style, does that bleed into other areas of your life, whether that's personally or professionally? Or is it a persona, kind of like a costume that you put on and, you know, you leave it where it's at?
No, I think it definitely comes into, it does kind of find its way into different parts of my life. And I think, I think they're actually inherently quite part of my personality as well.
Yeah.
Wherein, again, like going back to like something we spoke about, like, do we exist in dualities, right? I think there's so many different ways in which I think that we're so multifaceted and very dynamic people as humans, right? There's no one strand that's going to make me. It might not be edgy and chic. That might just be for my like clothing and like things I like to wear. Yeah. But I do think that it does bleed into my personal life and also professionally, because I do wear these different hats. You know, I value my time with family a lot. Around family, I'm wearing a different hat. Around my professional friends and colleagues, I'm wearing a different hat. And I think for someone like me, that allows me to be my best self in different areas, and they're all me. But in order to be my best self for the people that I, you know, whether it's I love and care for across all boards and also me. I think it's important to, you know, allow yourself to just be and wear the different hats whenever you need to.
You know, it seems like that would spell, because you embrace those multiplicities, that helps in some ways create things that are long lasting, right? Whether there's relationships, whether there's personas, whether there's great longevity to careers, making sure that you're not suppressing some of these areas or personas make things a little bit more longitudinal. And I'm curious about that specific aspect of things, because how do you make music and art in a world where instant gratification and almost like the disposability of art and music exists so much in the marketplace?
It's wild. It's a wild world out there. And it's insane to be an artist in a space like this as well, where everything is very driven by your utility to the world. And in that form, when you think of art, you're helping someone's soul. And I think, again, in a more vague sense or a more metaphysical sense, I think there's no greater resource you could give. You're giving your knowledge, you're giving yourself through that. But I mean, you know, in the utility standpoint, it's you're not, so it's tough. It's hard, honestly. But I think what I end up doing is, I think by nature, I'm someone that keeps a very small circle around me, very, very tightly knit. And I think that allows me to kind of tune out the chaos, and also allows me to kind of tune out the opinions. And I think it's just, you know, the set people that I have in my circle, it's those opinions that I really take in. And then the other opinions, I value them, but am I necessarily going to change my life around those? Probably not. Yeah.
I love how you put that, by the way. That, like, you know, this idea that you're the longitudinal relationship of art is how it actually feeds someone's soul, irrespective of the, you know, again, how many likes something has or how many hits or downloads something has.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. And speaking to that, I imagine that you automatically get fed that with your close circle.
Yeah.
And the rest of it helps in some ways to balance the rest of the kind of noisiness that's out there.
Exactly. I think that's generally why I think I prefer keeping a tighter circle, because I think being vulnerable is a scary thing, again. And like, I think when you're vulnerable with people that, you know, they have your best interest, and it all kind of draws in together. I think if you're operating with a vision for yourself or for your life, I'm not even talking as like a career, but like, if I want to see myself somewhere when I'm 80 years old, I'm making little steps towards it. And I just want to have the right people around me on my journey, honest people, people that make me a better human being and in turn make me a better artist.
Speaking of which, when you're feeding other people's souls with your art and paying attention to how that gets nourished in your both inner circle and even taking in feedback.
Right.
I'm so curious these days how your soul is being fed. So I wanted to ask you, in a way, what's kind of on your current playlist? What's some of the music you're listening to that's feeding your soul? And by the way, does that reflect kind of a particular tone or temperature or mood, you know, that's going on for you right now?
It's actually, I have a really insane array of music in my playlist, which is a bit embarrassing, because it's like, it goes from like A.R. Rahman to like Ghana, who's like a rapper, to it has Sade to Whitney Houston back to like Sunidhi Chauhan. So it's got like a mix of everything. But right now, I think for me, I've been listening to a lot of Sade. I think it's just her music. It's very invigorating and beautiful and calming. I think that's kind of where I'm at. But I also really enjoy hip hop and rap. And yeah, there's just a lot of appreciation for all of it.
Right. Very, very eclectic. And when you are making new discoveries, or you're, you know, again, as you mentioned, your soul is being fed and your soul is being spoken to, does that inspire in a way or kind of spark the creativity to build some new intersections, whether that's through listening to someone like Sade or a new kind of Hindi, you know, tune? Do those intersections then become easier to explore?
100%. I think for me, kind of bringing together, whether it's culture, whether it's, I think it's a really big part of my identity as well. And I think also as what I do as an artist, I think fusing my worlds together is something that I am very constantly inspired by the things I see, inspired by the way I receive them as well, whether it's music or like, or my environment. So most definitely, I think that amalgamation of like, bring, like listening to Sade and then also going back to Bombay and listening to Arijit Singh, and it, their worlds apart, but it's a universal language, and they're conveying certain universal truths, and that's so beautiful. And I think to recognize that, that like music transcends time and it transcends so many borders, physical and metaphysical, and I think that's where you just begin to appreciate it in a completely different way.
You know, for people who might be newly discovering you, right? You're on their playlist and they're now seeking out some of the art that you're creating. When when people hear your music for the first time, how are you hoping they feel?
I hope that they feel loved, and I hope that they feel heard. And I think, I really hope that they know that they're honestly, I think love is at the crux of it. I just hope that they feel like they are loved.
Well, I know that your art and music are speaking to many, and hopefully they're loving and appreciating it. Ruvina, thank you so much for joining us. This was really such a treat. I hope we'll be able to connect again down
the road. No, definitely. I would love that. This was an incredible conversation. So thank you so much. I really appreciate the questions and just the depth of the conversation.
Thank you so much again, Ruvina, and please check out her music as it's streaming everywhere. A big thank you again for rating and reviewing and passing the word along to your friends and family about Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Please again, be fiercely conscious of our climate and the planet that we live on, and try and deliver a random act of kindness to someone along the way. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.